Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and today I'm joined by Michelle Hanley, who is the Senior Manager of Demand Gen over at Payit. Michelle, thank you so much for joining me today.
Woo, so glad to be here, Mason. Happy to talk with you today.
I am really stoked because right as soon as we got on, you were like, hey, Mason, what if we talked about business to government? And I was like, that sounds amazing because I've had no one else talk about that. So today we're going to focus in exclusively on the nuances of B2G in the context of an ABM program. So essentially, this is B2G ABM. We will try not to use that many acronyms, but it's both government and B2B. So like, who knows? Anyway, Michelle, the biggest thing we always focus in on with any ABM program start is like, who do we actually go after? So I'm curious for you, as you think about the target audience, like how did you determine the actual target accounts to go after, especially with all the nuances of like government? Cause like, I'll let you take it away. So like, how did you actually figure out like, who is our target account list?
Yeah, the great question. And it's constantly evolving, if you can believe that. So we focus at Payit. So we do payment processing for governments. And what that technically means is if you go on and pay your property tax bill or your water bill, and you go online to, I'm in Atlanta. So if you go on to cityofatlanta.com, go and pay that bill, that portal, that's what we do. So we don't touch federal. So it's all state and local stuff. So that's kind of who we go after. And what's interesting with governments is there's a finite group of them. Right? They're not gaining any more cities. They're not gaining any more states. So you kind of already know who you're going after. You just kind of have to determine their buying cycles and buying cues to kind of see, hey, would they be a fit with what our product is, what their timeline looks like. Then you can kind of determine that target audience for 6 months to a year or 2 years, right? So that's a big thing of what we focused on with my sales team this year.
Yeah. We've had a couple of clients that also serve in, like, one specifically was in the like compliance software for specific city sizes of water utilities and like mixing all the chemicals. So like, they're like, so we've got total of like 500 customers, period. It's like, that's it. I just got those 500. We're done. I was like, this is wild. So it was just all like, when are they up? And like education, because also a lot of governments are kind of like rural and they aren't as into technology for many these things. I'm curious, as you then outline, the focus was, what are the buying signals? Like,
yeah.
How did you identify the viable buying signals for the different governments that you were targeting?
So, great question. I think it really comes down to, you can say that pretty much every government is going to be about 25 years behind where every other business is in like the B2B space, right?
Yep.
Because, I mean, with different election cycles, because if you think about it too, when you think about your target people at the government offices, those are elected positions. So those people leave every 2, 4, 6, 8 years, right? And they change positions, they change departments. So it's really tough to kind of narrow that down. So yeah, I guess you can really say that there is a need to go digital. And you would think that, you know, a lot more agencies would understand the need for people being able to pay with a credit card online. I think just me being in the normal B2B space and me being a millennial, I'm like, oh yeah, that's a totally normal thing that people should be able to do. But you would be surprised at the amount of agencies that just people walk in and pay their property tax bill. They walk into the office and they bring their cash or they bring a check. And like, that is normal for them. It's completely mind blowing to me.
So what are you starting to identify for your sales teams then effectively prioritize? That's like, all right, they're actually entering into a buying cycle in the next 2 years.
We rely a lot on RFPs too, especially at the state level. So that's kind of how we have a whole different team that focuses on that procurement side, that we're able to say that, hey, the state of Georgia is, you know, jumping into this cycle. We need to put them on our target account list over the next 2 years. Because our buying cycle is anywhere from 6 to 18 months. I mean, it really just depends. Local deals are a lot smaller, so maybe 6 months, but state level deals, oh yeah, it can go 18 to 24 months. Like it's crazy. So understanding that those things are coming up and we need to put our hat in the ring, right? So yeah, that's a big part of it.
Okay. And then once you've identified those signals and effectively prioritized, like, what are you functionally doing? Because like somebody that was trying to go after local governments and they're just like constantly getting blocked on cold email because of all the security things. Yeah. So like, how do you actually, like, what are the tactics you run in order to break into a local or state government?
Yeah. So what I've done in my past in normal B2B, I've had to completely flip upside down on its head because the stuff I was using before is not the same at all. Even for webinars, like webinars are usually a very top of funnel thing for normal B2B marketers. For me, they're completely bottom of funnel. Like I might get 25 people on a webinar. I'm running one next week, actually. And I have 25 people registered in other roles, I'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm failing. I need to get it out there more. But now I'm looking at the people who are registered and they're people that are actually in open opportunities. So they're coming along and doing a quote unquote sniff test, basically saying, hey, you know, Payit isn't some homegrown backyard basement thing. It's actually a real tactic. And so it's really interesting. Email is another big thing that I use a lot on a day-to-day basis in terms of nurtures, of just product announcements, you know, newsletters, even those are great touch points. Because if you think about government employees, they're on their computer all day long and they just have Outlook open. So it gives them something to do. And then another really big tactic that we do on my team is we have about 100 events a year on like both local and state side. And we're really only US and Canada focused, but that's a ton of events. And we use that as a great launch point to meet new people, to shake hands, kiss babies, you know, all those different tactics. That's a big thing for us in terms of getting those contacts and really having those conversations face to face. It really kicks off the process a lot easier than us having to do our own research, dig in, especially with all those nuances, spam filters, all that stuff that governments normally go through.
So if I'm hearing this correctly, you guys do events as like your awareness play to get people opted into email. Nurture through email, and then your webinars are essentially conversion or pipeline acceleration programs.
You got it. You got it. We run a lot of paid ads as well in paid media, but that's really just awareness level too. It just keeps the lights on. It's air cover.
What tools are you guys typically using to run this kind of a program?
So obviously our webinar, we use a platform called BigMarker. If you're familiar with that one, it's super robust. Our automation platform, Marketo. So, I mean, just like the core standard CRM, Salesforce. For our BDR outreach, we use a program called Groove, which is familiar to outreach.io and SalesLoft. It's like another cousin. It's a Clary program. Those all correlate. Gosh, what else? For attribution, we use a program called CaliberMind. I know you talked with Nadia Davis. So we love using that. We just implemented it over the past couple of months, and it has been a game changer because let's say, for example, the age-old question of my CMO coming to me and saying, hey, Michelle, we've got an extra $100,000 this year we can spend. What are the programs that generate the most revenue and, you know, make the most sense? And why two strokes on a keyboard in CaliberMind, I can tell you it's events and webinars. And that's immediately where I would tell her to put the money, which is crazy to me. In other businesses, it would be like, oh yeah, it'd be paid media, paid social, you know, all that stuff, right? But for us, it doesn't move the needle that much.
Which is wild. So
yeah,
I'm curious, as you then think about the specific distribution channels, is there anything else that is in play often outside of like events and email? I know you referenced some paid media programming, but like that sounds more awareness level. Like, how are you consistently getting in front of this audience?
We do a lot too that I should have mentioned with third-party agencies as well, running content syndication. That's another big play for us. That allows us to honestly just contact harvest. That's a big part of it. And stay top of mind with our pieces of content. So we release probably 4 or 5 big white papers and consumer studies and agency studies each year. And those are great pieces of content that I can push on multiple channels. And so, yeah, content syndication is big for us. And it's just a lead capture, really. And then we funnel those people into our system in our lead scoring model, and they go through nurtures, they get, you know, webinar invites, they are put into target account list, you know, all those different things if they fit the ICP criteria.
So to make sure I hear that correctly, because it's from the nuances of government, you're primarily focused on just like getting contacts within government. And then once you've gotten their contact information, you then further segment based on who they are.
Exactly. And there's so many different, like, so if you think about what we do, there's different agencies that we do it. Like we do the DMV for North Carolina. So if you live in North Carolina and when you renew your license, you use our platform, right? So that's one other target sector. Another thing is finance, right? Another sector is IT. So it's a lot of segmentation that I do on a day-to-day basis and just really understanding who the buying groups are, because for example, the state of Georgia, the buying groups might be completely different than the state of Texas. So you really just have to really fine tune. And that's a lot of work that I'm doing right now. Actually, it's like, okay, I understand who the buying groups are, but let's get a little bit more nuanced. Let's actually break it out by state or even city by city basis and just kind of understand, because the people that are buying the software in Texas might not be the same ones that are buying it in Georgia. It's crazy.
Yeah. You mentioned you do 4 or 5 major white papers on an annual basis that seem to drive a lot of engagement and help you get a lot of those contacts. You're running webinars. I'm curious, how do you think through the overall content mix so that you're actually engaging the audience with the content they need at that moment?
Yeah, that's a great question. We rely a lot on different publications too, to kind of tell us that, hey, for CIOs and state government, these are the things they're most focused on for the year. And we'll take a look at that and say, okay, for right now, as everyone is saying, AI is a big one, right? So that's a big, you know, target for us. Another one is just efficiency. Like the webinar I'm running next week is basically all on efficiency, because governments right now, they're leaning down and they're having to make hard decisions, but also keep the lights on and really just get scrappy, essentially. So those are some big things. And those allow us to take those topics and understand that people are interested in them, and we're able to elaborate further. So in 2 weeks, we've got an AI white paper coming out of how governments are viewing white papers and, you know, or viewing AI and how they're wanting to use it and implement it. And there's also a lot of hesitations and red tape, as you can imagine. So kind of how to navigate that or how to get your feet in the water. And, you know, so that's a little bit of what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you lean into partners that are doing a lot of research to then work through, these are the topics that are relevant today, right now. And then how do we make sure we get content out in a timely basis around those things? And it sounds like webinars are a big thing for you as like a quicker turnaround.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But another thing I would say with webinars is you have to be conscious of timing, because timing is a political play, not just fiscal. So you kind of have to understand of when you're putting those webinars out there, you know, what does their timeline look like? Because right now in the summertime, they're taking off. They're on vacations with their families and all this kind of stuff. So running webinars, I mean, I've got one running next week, but it's not going to be the most turned out and viewed one. I'll just be honest with you. But then I would have in, you know, January, I ran a webinar in January, 150 people attended, right? So it just really, it's so cyclical. And then you also have to understand where their fiscal timeline is as well, because a lot of them, it's in June, some might be in April. So depending on when you're hitting those people with the information, it's you have to be conscious of so many things.
I'm curious, because that then gets into like success metrics, and you've done a good job illustrating, like, yes, 25 on a webinar in June and looking at the titles is a win. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, as you think about success metrics, like what are the things that you're typically looking at to say, oh yeah, we're definitely doing super well, or these are areas of opportunity to improve?
Yeah, I think we're still trying to figure that out. So we have a goal for our company of sales stage one opportunities that the sales team needs to hit every year. And our KPIs are tied into that. But we're still trying to fine tune the nuances of, okay, how many webinars do we need to produce to make sure we're hitting those, or to make sure we're hitting those points?
So you just did a lot to specifically outline the nuances of, like, a webinar in January might have 150, but a webinar in June might be 25. And both of those are a success. And I don't know, like, as I talk with people, like, that's hard to outline that those are both a success sometimes, because expectations are, well, we did a webinar that did 150 and that becomes a new baseline. Yeah. So I'm curious, as you are thinking about success metrics, like, what are you guys measuring right now that indicates the program is a success, or outlines there may be areas for improvement?
So yeah, that's a great question. And I'll be completely frank and honest with you. We are still trying to figure that out. You know, you think that you have it all figured out, but no, it's every day you're learning, every day you're growing. We have a general metric that we share with the sales team this year, and it's stage one opportunities. And basically, we are all working toward that number of new business prospecting. That has nothing to do with, like, cross-sell, upsell, all those different opportunities as well. So this is strictly like new business. So a lot of what we're working toward is that from our target account list. And we've got about 800 on our target account list right now. So cool. That's a large number as well. Because if you think about, those are specific agencies. So that might be the city of Atlanta. But then in the city of Atlanta, you might have 40 to 50 people on that buying group that then factor down, right? So yeah, a lot of it is even vanity metrics, such as, are we getting the right people in our system that our sales teams need to talk to? So that also could be a metric that we work toward, making sure that the events that we're going to have the right people, so we can get our people in front of the right folks at the right time, making sure that, you know, if it's an IT specific event, that the people that would be part of that buying group, that they're there essentially. So really being really, you know, having a lot of scrutiny on those different things is a big factor of what we do. Even content syndication as well, making sure that those are the right audiences that we're getting in front of. So all of those different things come into play when I look about success at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think that just relationship expansion within an account is an underrated metric for success, because, you know, if you're looking at an account that's got one contact associated in your CRM versus an account that has 15 and they've all had some form of engagement previously, the account that's got 15 people associated has definitely got a higher propensity to close, but we just don't typically measure those things. So I love that call out of, again, we're doing some contact farming because we need to get these people in the database. And then once we've done that, segmenting them to then see relationship expansion within the account. I think that's a super helpful metric for people to think through.
Yeah.
As you then think through this was never perfect by any stretch of the imagination, and I'm sure it's been a very bumpy road along the way. What were some of the unexpected roadblocks that popped up to implement this program?
Oh, gosh. Pretty much everything. No. It's like every day a wrench is thrown into it. A big part of it too, and I haven't mentioned this yet, is just budget constraints. Like, we're all trying to do more with less. And as you know, I mean, to even run anything on LinkedIn, you have to spend a certain number of dollars for it even to make sense to do it. So really, yeah, just instead of doing 8 campaigns and spending $500 on each of them for the entire month, how about I run 2 and spend $4K each? Do you know what I'm saying? So having to get scrappy and really understanding, okay, what is this program really going to do? And do I really need to run 8 of this? Why can't I just, you know, break it into top of funnel campaign and middle to bottom of funnel campaign with all my different ads, right? So being scrappy with the budget, and then understanding, like I mentioned before, you know, if I had $100,000 more in my budget this year, where would I spend it? And having a tool like CaliberMind or having some sort of attribution look back is super key for us, because then I'm able to, like I said, 2 strokes on the keyboard and be able to say, okay, it's webinars and events. So my CMO is happy. I'm happy. The, you know, C-suite is like, okay, perfect. That makes a lot of sense. And those are things that we couldn't really answer that question before we implemented a tool like that. Like, we really had to do a lot of farming on our own of Excel downloads and putting this into this system. And, you know, it was never perfect. So
yeah,
it's been a game changer for us.
I love it. Well, last question is just, you went into super helpful detail. So I've got a couple people that are in the B2G space. I'm actually just going to go ahead and send this to them before it releases, because I think this is way too helpful. Are there any other pieces of advice that you give somebody that's thinking about implementing ABM for the very first time that we haven't covered already?
I would say, for the government space, risk aversion is real, right? Like, buying decisions are high stakes. Like, no one wants to be the person that picked the wrong vendor. No one wants to be that guy, right? So you're going to get a lot of that in this space, and people are going to be really hesitant. Another thing that I mentioned before is, like, they've been on legacy systems, and there's a lot of mindset in governments that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And as we all know, you know, with AI and the rise of the digital space and the digital age, and even with the buying groups now for their customers, for millennials, right? We pay with a credit card online for everything. Like, I've never driven down to the water office and paid my water bill, like, ever. Like, I would never do that. I just want it to be direct deposit and be gone, right? Like, I wanted to take it out. So understanding that you're going to have a lot of pushback, and you're going to have a lot of old school mindsets, which is completely fine. But in your ABM program, you need to understand that the messaging that you're doing and all the different tactics that you're doing relate to multiple people, you know, relate to the millennials has just been elected in office, that is super happy to work with change, and then also have to relate to her boss that is, you know, in their 60s and is on the way out the door, that doesn't want to implement anything new. So you kind of have to bridge that gap a little bit. And that's kind of the advice I would give, is just to understand that, yeah, you're going to get pushback, but understand that you will, and work better and work smarter and work harder at still doing what you're doing.
I love it. Michelle, thank you so much for joining me today. If people want to find out more about you, where would you point them?
I would point them to Payit, or feel free to come and contact me. I'm also on LinkedIn at Michelle Hanley. So feel free to connect with me. Would love to talk more about B2G space. I know there's not many of us out there that are doing it, but would love, you know, to build a little small community.
I love it. Well, again, Michelle, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you want to do an even deeper dive on building out your ABM program, we're actually hosting our next ABM in a Day workshop on November 13th. It is a full 6 hours digging into all of the reasons ABM programs fail and exactly how to fix them. And I know what you're thinking, 6 hours is a huge time investment. Admittedly, it is, but it's taking 6 hours to ensure you nail the next 6 months of your ABM program. In case you're wondering, is it worth it? The last time we hosted it, we got a 9.3 out of 10 on our content. So I can guarantee this is a worthwhile time investment to ensure you nail your ABM program. So if that sounds like something you'd like to do, go to scrappyabm.com/workshop to register today, and we'll see you on November 13th.